Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Blazer Banter Podcast. It's our first podcast of 2016, and if you're joining us for the first time or are a return listener, Happy New Year. I'm Eric Garcia Gunderson, the Trailblazers beat writer for The Columbian, and the Blazers just wrapped up game 41 of the regular season last night, which was Wednesday, marking the halfway point. I was at the game last night. They blew out the Utah Jazz to help them move within 1.5 games of the 8th and final playoff seed in the Western Conference, which the Jazz currently hold. I don't think many people before the season expected the Blazers to hang this close or for the Western Conference to be this bad. Utah is starting to get healthier, but their bench is a problem that won't be solved this year and probably will keep the door open for the Blazers and other teams like the Kings and Nuggets, you know, to believe that they can hang around in the playoff race for a little bit longer. Damian Lillard nearly had a triple-double in the game, a game which followed back-to-back excellent performances, including 40 points and 10 assists in a loss to the Warriors, and 31 points in a comeback win against the Oklahoma City Thunder. Lillard had a vintage Lillard time night against Oklahoma City. I would probably even say it was better than vintage. He scored 17 points in the final 3 minutes. Lillard's done great things, but he's never had a performance quite like that. It was a pretty awesome night to be in the arena, and I'll be honest, the crowd was probably as nuts as I've seen them in a game all season, and probably as nuts as I've seen them since Lillard hit that shot against the Rockets, because they didn't really have that many great moments, I would say, since that shot. But we were lucky to catch up with Lillard for a little bit last Saturday, the day before he went off against the Thunder, to find out how he sees the Blazers halfway through the season under his direct leadership for the first time.
Halfway in the season's kind of coming up. What have you seen from the team growth-wise? And what have you learned?
I think we've stuck with whatever's come our way. We've had some tough times. We've had some good times. And I think the good thing about our team is we've been able to stay even keeled through it all. You know what I mean? I think we're in a good position. We're still in position to get a playoff spot. But just how together we are through all of those things is, it's great. It's fun to be a part of the team. The more exciting thing is how much better we can do a lot of things, and understanding that we can be better at those things to give ourselves a chance to win more games. Just getting to that point.
Having been a part of a process where your rookie year, you started off, not having a great overall defense, and you guys consistently improve. What kind of lessons maybe can you take away from that experience that can prepare you for, the improvements you guys have got to make on that end?
Just understanding that, teams can come out and have great nights, and the better teams in the league, they do it consistently. I think the thing for us is to understand that when we defend for four quarters, that gives us our best chance to win games. As hard as it is to do it for one full game, to be able to put a stretch of games together and do it every game is even harder. That's the point where we got to get to. We'll have two good defensive games and then three games where we don't let up, but we just don't have good defensive games. Whether it's not being locked in enough to tendencies. We go through other team sets and shoot around, and days leading up to games and practice, we go over it, and maybe we should be better at understanding what's coming. You know what I mean? But it's things like that that's gonna make us a better team. So we just got to lock in and do it more consistently.
But I mean, it is kind of a process, though.
It's a process.
It's not instant. Right?
It's not. And like you said, my first year, we got better over time. And I think this year we're doing the same thing. Everything is in stretches. We'll have a good week, and then we'll have a not so good week. So we just got to stick with it and keep getting better at the things I mentioned, locking in on scouting reports. Understanding what teams like to do, what type of sets they like to get to, what sets work well for them, what they're comfortable doing, what they're uncomfortable doing, and start taking advantage of those things.
One more thing, over this first half of the season, I guess, who's one guy or another guy that you maybe learned the most about from a game standpoint, or, you know, from, you know, his impact on the team, impact on the game?
Mason Plumlee. I think not just his ability to rebound and his ability to pass the ball and, you know, what he could do handling the ball. You know, I was surprised by that because I didn't know that he could do a lot of those things. But the competitor he is, you know, I had no idea. You know, he competes. He's selfless, and I mean, he's gotten into at least 5 scuffles out there where it's like, you know, he having to run in with somebody, and, you know, I mean, before I didn't think he would back down, but I mean he fearless, you know what I mean, and he's one of those guys that, you know, when it's time to go to war, if anything is going on out there, you want him on your side, and you know, that's something that I learned about him.
Was there a moment in practice that you saw that, or was this all these games that he's kind of had these?
I mean, in practice, like training camp and practice leading up to games and the preseason stuff, it happened where in practice somebody would foul him and then the foul wouldn't get called, and the next possession on defense he just physical and he's slapping at the ball, and you know, he pissed off about it. So, I mean, I saw it then, but you know, it's easier to do that with people that you're around every day, and you know, people you're comfortable with, than to go out there and do it against other teams and against people you don't know how they're gonna react, and you know what I mean. Don't matter who it is, and that's, you know, that's what he showed me.
So like when you see him pop up against Jimmy Butler, and like, you know, because he kind of said, like, "What's up?"
Yeah.
Jimmy, was that kind of a moment where you're like, "Okay, Mace."
Yeah, he showed me something because Mace don't walk around with his chest out trying to act tough. You know what I mean? But when it presented itself, he was like, you know what I mean, "What's up?" Like you said, what you want to do, type. And I mean, that's what you want to see from somebody, you know, that's on your team.
That last question in the interview was from Mike Richmond of the Oregonian asking Damian about the Plumlee scuffle with Jimmy Butler against Chicago earlier this year. Thanks again to Dame for giving us 5 solid minutes to talk about where the team is at. The Blazers have also had some defensive issues, which, you know, I talked about with Lillard. The reason I asked Lillard if it takes a while to establish a solid defense was because in my first year in this job, I remember something that ESPN's Doris Burke told me about defense when I interviewed her for a story. I was, you know, the Blazers at that time were not a really good defensive team either. And they were just establishing a new scheme under Terry Stotts. And I asked, you know, what do you look for in a defensive team? And she said, you know, you don't have to have great defensive personnel to be a good defensive team, but you have to look and see if they're making improvements. Are they getting better together? The example that she mentioned were the Orlando Magic teams of Stan Van Gundy, who aside from Dwight Howard didn't really have very strong defensive personnel, although they probably had smarter defenders who were a little bit more veteran, more experienced players. The Blazers haven't necessarily shown that they've been getting better. Their defense has actually slipped. They're now bottom 5 in the league in defensive rating. Just to put that into context, how bad they are, I'll read off some Synergy sports stats, which, you know, break things down by play categories, at least the ones that we have publicly available on NBA.com. The Blazers are dead last in points per possession allowed in pick and rolls when the ball handler takes the shot. They've been a little bit better against roll men, ranking 18th. They're also 23rd in isolations, an area where they've struggled in recent seasons, and it's not something that other teams or any other team does very much in the league, unless you're the Lakers, which, you know, maybe that's not the worst thing, but they still got to be better in man-to-man defense, and they've still got to be better in situations and knowing personnel, which is something that Lillard brought up a lot. Cuts off the ball have also been devastating for the Blazers. Only the Pelicans have had a higher points per possession allowed on cuts. My own analysis of the Blazers, I think the Lillard and McCollum backcourt pairing is undersized, but I think it's a little bit of a cop-out to blame all the defensive struggles on that pairing. I think Plumlee gambles a lot. He doesn't play within the scheme all the time, which can sometimes lead to easy baskets for other players on the opposing teams. I think Aminu has been excellent. I think Vonleh has brought something defensively since being in the starting lineup over Myers Leonard, but he's still 20 years old. He's still learning the game, And so when you throw all those things into each other, into the mix, with the fact that these guys have only played with each other for 41 games, it's going to take some time. Lillard thinks that the scouting reports and the tendencies are kind of the key to turning it around, and the experience and getting to play with each other. But Stotts thinks that experience might be a little bit more important than necessarily playing together, and the Blazers are a young team, so he's praising patience on the defensive end.
Defensively, having already had, you know, the growth the last couple of years from where you guys started, and then, you know, you guys kind of gradually got to top 10 level, what did that process of gradually going through that teach you about, you know, the process you guys are going through again, kind of, in that way?
Yeah, I think we made a jump from year one to year two for a couple of reasons. One is, we changed our philosophy, and there was a learning curve with that first half of the season, second half of the season. So there's no question there's a learning curve, but that was also a learning curve with veteran players. So when you look at our team and the number of new players we have and the number of young players we have, it takes longer. It's just a longer process.
Of course, a Blazers update over the things that have happened recently would be incomplete if we did not have sound from the epic night that was CJ McCollum's surprise inactive. Allen Crabbe was announced as the starter that night and would have been completely caught off guard had it not been for assistant coach Jim Moran trying to give him a heads up that he was actually going to start instead of come off the bench like he normally does.
Jim Moran came to me while, you know, our little presentation for, you know, before they announced the starting lineups. He was like, AC, you're starting. And then I laughed because I thought he was joking. And he was like, he had to tell me like three times. He was like, no, I'm serious. And then I looked over at coach, talking to CJ. And then they called me and were like, yeah, you're going to start. There was a mistake. So I didn't know until right before the starting lineups.
Everybody in the situation felt bad. CJ McCollum's answers that night were very professional and very understanding.
Could you lead us through what happened from your perspective? I know it's the craziest thing for you ever been around, but.
No, I mean, I went out to warm up, and before we were about to do the starting lineups, Coach Tosh just made me aware that there was something happened with the inactive list. That was it.
It looked like you were sitting down on the bench during pregame introductions as if you thought your name was going to get called. Were you unclear up to that point whether or not you would play?
Yeah, I was unclear.
So when you obviously went back and changed into team, was that, did they basically tell you to do that, or was kind of that?
Yeah, I was told to change. I mean, when you're inactive, you can't be in game clothes. So.
CJ, how do you feel about this happening?
That's unfortunate, but it's over with. Just moving on to the next game.
What was your initial reaction? Angry, upset, confused, all the above?
It's in the past. Putting it in the past now. Nothing you can do about it now. Just got to move on and try to get a win Friday.
But the best sound of the night had to belong to Doc Rivers, who was definitely the controversial figure in the night, who reportedly had a hand in McCollum not being able to play and in not allowing the Blazers to change the active roster after the initial one with the clerical error was sent out.
Your perspective, what happened with the CJ active and inactive situation?
I just know they messed it up.
Yeah.
You know, other than that.
And did they try to change it back after the making the error?
I think so. But once you make it, we made that error once last or twice, right, in the last 2 years, and it's not our fault.
Yeah.
When did you know that he was inactive?
Right away, for the most part. You know, it wasn't on the list, and then they came and tried to change it, and it's the last we heard of
it. It seemed like your staff was a little animated before the game. You were just trying to figure out what was going on?
We were trying to figure out what the heck. You know, we knew you couldn't change the rule because it happened to us. But it's not on us to do that. That's all on them.
You said it's happened to you twice in the last 2 years?
Yeah, and both times it was one, we just had signed the guy right before the game and we messed that one up. The bottom line is, honestly, there should be no active list.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been fighting this for 3 years. Why is I'm still trying to, someone explain to me why there is an active list. And we can't get a change, you know. And for coaches, it's tough. You know, there's nights where guys are healthy. Mm-hmm. And we got to tell them they can't play, yet we're still paying them. I've never understood why there is an active list. If somebody can explain that to me clearly,
I would love to know that.
I don't know if we'll see another time when another 20-point scorer is mistakenly left inactive because of a clerical error. Also, it's funny that in the NBA that they still do these rosters on paper. You'd think, being the unofficial league of social media that it is, that they'd be able to submit active rosters on an app or a PickStitch or whatever. I don't know. But thanks again for joining us. This was a short episode, like most of these are, in the interest of time. I just want to be able to give you a brief bit and get you a Blazers update that doesn't take a whole lot of time. I hope that I was able to do that for you. We hope to have an episode early next week that will go with our Monday feature on a group of Blazers that have developed an odd yet admirable bond around the breakfast table. So look out for that next week, and be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes. You can find the podcast by searching Blazer Banter. You can also follow the podcast by subscribing to the Columbians SoundCloud page on soundcloud.com. You can also access it on our blog, blogs.columbian.com/blazer-banter. Once again, I'm Eric Garcia Gunderson, and the Blazer Banter podcast, signing off until next time. Thanks for joining us.